Heat Nation, welcome back to Heaters Gonna Heat, the Miami Heat podcast for the OTG Podcast Network. It was a good, not great week for the Miami Heat this time around, picking up wins against the Cavs and the Lakers, but dropping one to the Memphis Grizzlies. Just to go over some quick notes real quick, start off with the Cavs. We beat them 115-101. Overall, this was a pretty much a good, solid team win. It was kind of interesting because no one on the Heat actually scored more than 20 points, yet they had seven players in double figures. So it was really a good team effort, sharing the ball. They did an exceptionally well, especially Jimmy Butler, finished with 11 assists, 15 points for a double-double. Heat finished 35 assists in total on 44 made field goals. So really kind of getting that idea of, like, the Heat were sharing the ball. They're getting people involved. There's no other way you get seven people in double figure points otherwise if you don't have everybody involved. And then just nobody having to really take over, not even Jimmy. Nobody had to get 20 plus. So great win that over there. And of specific, really, Robinson went 6 of 9 from 3 in that game. So Robinson continues his hot shooting since the trade deadline, which is fantastic. Overall, the Heat went 15 of 38 for 39 from 3-point range, which is good for 39.5%. So great shooting game for the Heat. Overall, though, this was a game that, even though they won by 14, they primarily pulled away in the fourth quarter. The game was a little bit too close for comfort throughout most of the way. Just the Cavs managed to make it scrappy and just stay in there. However, end of the day, Miami got the win. That's obviously the most important thing. On to the next game. This was the loss to the Memphis Grizzlies. We lost 124-112. As the score would indicate, our defense was especially bad in this game. Memphis pretty much had a solid lead for most of the game, in the range of, like, at times the Heat would have gotten it down to 3 to 5 points, then the Grizzlies would just pump it right back up to double digits. So it's kind of a demoralizing loss there. Especially when you consider that, like, despite saying that the defense was bad, I guess in a way you can, if you wanted to try to be glass half full on this, you would say the defense did its job in the sense that the Grizzlies star player, Ja Morant, pretty much got held down pretty well. Bam was switching on him a lot and contained Morant to just 10 points. So if the point of your defense is to just stop the opposing team's best player, then great, you did a good job there. However, the other part of defense is keeping everybody else from going off instead. And that is where Miami did a terrible job. Specifically, first against Jonas Valanciunas, who dropped 15 points in the first quarter, kept Memphis, helped them build the lead that they would eventually hold for the rest of the game. Valanciunas finished with 20, but the 15 in the first quarter was the big one. And then the other really rough one was Dylan Brooks, who I'm putting on a random scrub Heat Co list because I apologize. Have not heard much of Dylan Brooks before this game. I know him now, though, as the player that dropped 23 points in the third quarter to help solidify that win. Finished with 28, but just to give you a better reference, Dylan Brooks scored more points in the third quarter alone than any other Grizzlies player did, period. And I got to call it out for this. But there were a few back-to-back baskets where Brooks was going right at Butler. And I'm not going to lie, I would have thought that Butler would have stepped up a little bit more to actually shut him down once it looked like Brooks was specifically going at him. But Brooks got what he wanted, and it ended up, like I said, it ended up being 23 and a quarter, apparently. Trying to at least get some good takeaways from this game, Robinson and Hero went 4-7 from 3, so again, continuing that trend where both are shooting very much better since the trade deadline. Which, again, to reiterate a point from earlier, Miami absolutely needs at least Robinson and Hero to knock down threes to give them some semblance of spacing. One of those two is going to be out there in closing times. One of those two is on the floor almost at all times, specifically to give Miami spacing. So the more comfortable they get with that, the better. Other, I guess, like, good takeaways I could try to do for the Grizzlies game. Jimmy Butler dropped 28 points and kind of did it at will almost. So he's looking more comfortable as a scorer, which has been a knock of him at times that he can sometimes be a little too passive. That night, though, he was not. Other good, I guess, takeaway from this is Bam Adebayo finished with a triple-double, dropping 18 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists. So kind of flashing his all-around game. Like I said as well, he was switching on to John Morant and taking care of him at the perimeter. So, I mean, good. There are some good parts to take away. The big negative here, though, was just the defense, especially on lesser players like Valanciunas and Dylan Brooks. Moving on from that game, though, the last one we had in between these episodes is the one that finished up last night against the Los Angeles Lakers, which was a win for Miami, 110-104. Comes with the big caveat that this was without Anthony Davis or LeBron James, and also with the caveat that the Lakers were hanging around and were pretty much in this until about the last 2 minutes. So kind of like with the Cavs game, it would have been nicer to put them away earlier, but hey, you got to at least take the W, because Miami is clearly at the point that every win matters the most. Some positives take away, obviously, beyond just the win. Robinson dropped 3-for-5 from 3. Hero went 4-for-5 from 3, so also continuing their good shooting. Game over game, it definitely looks like they are bringing their season percentages back up closer to what they used to be last season, which is definitely wins for Miami. Unfortunately for the Heat, Goran Dragic looks like he's starting to struggle hard. He finished 3-9 from the field, 0-4 from 3. He had 5 turnovers, some of which near the third quarter helped to spark a small run that kept the Lakers in the game. He doesn't look as healthy as we would want him to be. And you got to think, earlier in the season when Butler was out, we kind of had to rush Dragic out there just to keep some playmaking on the floor. We didn't have Oladipo at the time either. So I'm cautious that just some of the miles he had to put on earlier in the season, he might not be fully healthy. If not for what we're going to talk about next, I would almost say rest Dragic for a little bit. Because he is unfortunately getting up in age, and it's going to start getting to that point. And now he needs to keep everything he has. Kind of like last season, he needs to keep his best for the playoffs. That's what's going to matter the most. But like I alluded to, this is kind of segues us into the other real big unfortunate thing that happened during the game against the Lakers last night, which was Victor Oladipo getting injured. So this was a first of all, Oladipo was having an absolutely fantastic night for the Heat, finishing with 18 points on 5 of 8 from the field, 2 of 3 from 3-point range, 6 of 6 from the line, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 block, 3 steals. He was playmaking on offense. He was being impactful on defense. He was scoring well and efficiently, which is always the big concern. Not that necessarily that you couldn't put up points, but whether you could do it efficiently and within the flow of the offense. That was all there tonight and was punctuated by a highlight dunk off of a Duncan Robinson assist, where he kind of flexed on Andre Drummond a little afterwards. And it's kind of like, yes, this is what we were hoping for when we got Oladipo. And now he's starting to get back into form. And then tragically later on in the fourth quarter, he went for a dunk and suffered a non-contact injury on his right knee he ended up having to pretty much limp off the court. It was good that he can walk. Definitely a good thing there. But the bad part is that, like I mentioned, this was an injury to his right knee, which is the same leg that he had his quad injury on back in 2019. So just for a refresher for anybody that doesn't know, Victor Oladipo, back in like the 2017-18 season, first when he went to Indiana, he was an all-star and borderline all-NBA level player, which is what we remember obviously as the highlight for him. The following year, the 2018-2019 season, is when he had that quad injury that pretty much took him out for about a year. He came back roughly right before the break happened due to the pandemic. And ever since then, this is what he's been more or less recovering from for about the past little over 2 years, has been that quad injury to his right leg. So just seeing that he now injured it, especially on a non-contact injuries, from what I understand, I do have a biology background, but physiology and all that, I don't want to get too far into an area that's not my expertise. But in general, from what I know, non-contact injuries are usually worse, just because it tends to indicate something that goes wrong structurally rather than, say, like, impact-related, like you would imagine, say, in a contact injury. At the time of this, there's been no reports outside of the Heat seem optimistic, the players seemed optimistic, but there's been no official medical reports out. And I'm just fingers crossed that hopefully he can get back to things. I would think, like, if looking at the worst case, well, the worst case would be if he aggravated something or maybe had something like a tear, which could end up taking him out for the season. That would obviously be the worst. The best case scenario, I think, especially just given the way that the Heat really need to make a push for the playoffs, they really need to value health. And also just because, and we'll get to this then the next part as well, they have a pretty brutal stretch up ahead. I wouldn't be surprised if even in the best case scenario, they maybe tell Oladipo, hey, don't go on this upcoming road trip with us. Rest up. So he might miss a few games. I'm hoping that's all it is. And in the meantime, you know how the Miami Heat are, next man up. In that case, we got to look to see who's going to replace him if he misses some games, which I think he will, at the very least just for safety concerns. In that case, I wouldn't be surprised if Eric Spoelstra dusts off Kendrick Nunn and let him take back over his starting role, because at least he can give a little bit of a scoring and playmaking punch that can be useful in Miami's starting lineup. Because, again, as I mentioned earlier, Dragic looks like he's struggling right now, so you don't want to put him in that starting role. Hero, we tried that earlier. He seems more comfortable coming off the bench and just being a primary scorer off there. Gabe Vincent could see some minutes, but I don't really see him as a starting option either, unfortunately. So I would think, like, Kendrick Nunn is probably the one that gets back into the rotation, starts. He's familiar with it enough. And I think he can hold the ship until Oladipo comes back. And I really hope they're ready, because Miami has a brutal next week coming up. These are all road games. At least the good part is that there's 2 days of rest before this starts on Sunday. But then it's 3 and 4 days with Sunday, Tuesday, and then a back-to-back Wednesday. First up are the Portland Trail Blazers, who Miami lost to earlier this season in a very, very close game on the trade deadline. And this is a team that is looking to gain ground and take the fifth seed from the Los Angeles Lakers that the Miami Heat just knocked off tonight. So we definitely have a motivated team. We have a dangerous team, especially on the offensive end, which is a little concerning. Miami's defense is starting to relax a little bit. Like this week we saw them, they let up triple digits in all three games, even though two of them they did win. Miami looked, at least their defense, was consistently holding teams below 100. Very much doubt that's going to happen with the Blazers. But this is definitely a game that Miami can win, even on the road. And I would argue they almost have to win in order for this trip to be a success, because the next two games are going to be even tougher. On Tuesday, we are at the Phoenix Suns, who are currently the second seed in the West and are trying to catch the Jazz for the first seed. The Suns also blew Miami out at home right before the trade deadline, so this is already a team that has shown they can go into Miami's place and smack them around. Would like to see the Heat return the favor. However, this is a very, very good Phoenix Suns team, and it's going to be even tougher at their place. Miami could walk in there with an edge on with a chip on their shoulder after getting smacked around last time at home. But definitely be nice, but it's going to be tough to say that Miami walks away with the win in that one. Just off of the, again, off of the previous game, and then just this time being at Phoenix. And then they get to turn around after what's going to be a very tough game against the Suns, and get to go to Denver and play them on a second night of a back-to-back in Denver, the Mile High City, which is notorious for, you don't want to play back-to-backs there. The change in altitude will mess with you. And that's just talking about the home court advantage side of things. Like, even if you did this on a normal altitude plane, This would still be a very tough game, especially on the second half of back-to-back. Denver has walked away to be one of the biggest winners from the trade deadline, bringing in Aaron Gordon, who has fit in perfectly with them. And they have gone undefeated, actually. I double-checked. They have gone undefeated since Aaron Gordon has joined their roster. So with the altitude and with an extremely good Denver Nuggets team that is surging after a key addition at the trade deadline, I don't actually know who's the tougher matchup between Denver or the Suns on this road trip. So for this, I actually would say Denver is probably the toughest just because you include the altitude part and it being the second night of the back-to-back. At least with the Suns, there's a night of rest beforehand. But yeah, I pretty much would just say the Denver game, give that a scheduled loss. So for Miami to come out of this successful, I mean, 0-3 is within play because all three are playoff teams. We're talking like not even play-in teams. These are all teams in the West making the playoffs that are currently avoiding the play-in game, so 6 or higher. So 0-3 is definitely possible. I would expect Miami to walk away with at least one win. The Blazers seem like the best win there. But if they can walk away 2 of 3, like if they can take the Blazers and the Suns, I got to be honest, unless Miami just kicks it up a level, I don't know how they go 3-3, especially with that brutal back-to-back. But 2 of 3, this is a great trip. 1 of 3, okay, we can survive that. 0 of 3, obviously, would be the worst. And that kind of takes us then to the playoff picture to kind of round out this episode. So Miami is currently the 6th seed, even though in terms of like games back, they are currently tied with the Charlotte Hornets and the Atlanta Hawks. However, the Hornets have played less games, so they have a slightly higher win percentage. It's like 0.01% or something like that. It's enough. And then with the Hawks, there's pretty much how the tiebreakers boil down is what keeps them ahead for now. We're starting to get a little bit of separation now with what's going on, what used to be the logjam in the East. So, like I said, Heat, Hornet, Hawks are all tied right now. Celtics at the 7th seed are one game back of those three. Then you go another game back, you got the Knicks at 8. Another game back, you got the Pacers at 9th. And then another game back, you got the Bulls at 10. So there is a total of 4 games right now separating where the Hawks, Hornets, Heat trio are versus the Bulls at the 10th seed. So by no means is there, you know, enough separation that Miami can breathe easy. You go on a little losing streak, another one of these teams goes on a winning streak, and Miami could be on the outside looking in at a 9th or 10th seed. It's not out of the woods yet. Conversely, the Heat can go on a little bit of winning streak probably when we get Oladipo back and after this next week that's going to be especially brutal. Then they could try to jump up and solidify their 4-5 matchup. So in looking at, like I said, the Heat right now, they're fighting for the 4-5 matchup, and they're doing it primarily against the Hawks and the Hornets, who are all technically ahead of them right now. If you were to look at this, the Hornets are probably the team that's due for a drop-off. They lost LaMelo Ball to a season-ending injury a few weeks back, and they managed to weather that well. I thought they would drop off then. However, now they've lost Gordon Hayward for a few weeks, and between those, it seems almost inevitable that they're going to drop. I use the word seems, though, because you never know with this league, especially when you have a team that overachieves like what the Hornets are. Sometimes like you can get a real galvanizing force from this. So like, for example, I think back to the 2016-17 Miami Heat that started off 11-30 and then went 30-11. There were some injuries there. Like there were some injuries to Deion Waiters at the time, yet the Heat kept rolling and they still pushed and finished 30-11, and Waiters was out, I want to say, the last 10 to 15 games of that. So it's still possible that, like, if you have enough momentum going forward, that you can still keep rolling, even if some of the players that were responsible for winning have dropped out. So I can't count the Hornets out yet. However, I mean, this is an opportunity to capitalize. And if Miami actually wants to consider themselves a contending team, then now is their chance to try to capitalize on what's going on with the Hornets to sneak into that 4-5 matchup. Because the Hawks look like they could actually have some staying power. And so I would imagine, like, between those two, the Heat have a better chance of jumping the Hornets. And even if the Hawks end up having home court at the 4th seed, that's fine. They are definitely a dangerous team, especially offensively. However, they're going to learn that in a playoff series, when you can just target Trae Young and go at him over and over and over and over again, I very much doubt their defense is going to hold, and Miami can win that series, which helps Miami at least avoid the worst case scenario, which I think would be not getting out of the first round. The floor for what Miami's expectations are in the playoffs is at least the second round, because a lot of that's going to depend upon the second round matchup. If the Brooklyn Nets solidify the first seed, Miami wins the 4-5 matchup and faces them in the semifinals and lose to the Nets, then that's like an understandable loss, because the Nets are just absurd this year. But hey, that's what happens when you have Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden all on the same team. That's going to be such a nightmare to stop in the playoffs. I'd hope we wouldn't see them until the conference finals, just because I think they're the best team that can knock Miami off in the East. But if we see them in the second round, then so be it. So long as we see them at least in the second round, and not the first by screwing around and dropping down to the seeding. So like I said, Miami is currently the 6th seed, but those teams that are right below them, Celtics, Knicks, Pacers, Bulls, they're still close enough that they could jump ahead. And were Miami to fall below the 6th seed, they could be in some serious trouble. Because if they fall to 7 or 8, obviously that means they're stuck in the play-in game. But then that also means that they get one of either Philly or the Nets. And getting the Nets in the first round would probably be the worst-case scenario. Like I said, the Nets seem like the best team equipped to beat Miami. If they knock Miami out in the first round, it doesn't matter. The optics of that look bad. Like, it's kind of like the weird thing where I could tell you, hey, the Nets beat the Heat in the playoffs, and there's just a world of difference in how the optics look if you say that it happened in the first round versus in the conference finals. Because at least, like, if it happens in the conference finals, it's like, okay, we knocked off two playoff teams to get to the conference finals and would have had to knock off somebody like a Philly or Milwaukee to get there. So at least the team could hang their head high. But if they mess around and they drop and have to play the Nets in the first round and lose to them, then obviously that's going to look very bad. And that's after trying to deal with the play-in madness. Like I've said before, the bare minimum for the Heat should be the 6th seed. At the very least, it avoids the play-in game and gives them their most favorable matchup between those three big teams in the East, which would be the Milwaukee Bucks, because we already know that this is a team that they beat last year, and they still seem equipped to do the same this year. So, would not like the 6th seed, because that's still a very rough first-round matchup. Very much would prefer the 4-5 matchup, because again, nobody, Hawks, Celtics, Knicks, Pacers, none of them, Bulls, none of those teams I would pick to beat Miami in a 7-game series, so that is their best bet to advance through the first and at least cross that hurdle. However, got to win the games first, and then somebody above us has to fall down. And probably more so a little bit of the latter, considering, like we've mentioned earlier, Miami has a brutal week ahead of them, that if you want to be realistic, like one of three would be a good week would be a solid week for them. So this next week's going to be rough, and then after that, we'll just kind of have to see where we're at next week. At this point, I'm pretty much going to be doing like a little bit of a playoff look at the end of every episode, just because there's a lot of motion that's going on there right now, and things literally can change week by week, so we will have to see. But for now, that's all for this episode. You can find me on Twitter at KBR Heat Nation and the pod at Heaters Heating. Also, be sure to check out the OTG Podcast Network at OTG Basketball. And if you're looking for some general NBA talk, be sure to check out the outlet. Nick always does a great job on that. And then I do thank you very much for checking in, and have a great one. Let's go, Heat Nation.